Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Greg Priddy.
Good evening. How are you?
I am well. And you?
I'm suffering from LOW.
Low what?
Late onset winter. But you know what the cure for late onset winter is? A good radiothon.
And we had an outstanding radiothon.
We did.
Didn't we?
I'm so touched. I really am.
Are you?
Well, I am.
Here's how touched you can be. First of all, our radiothon, our little radiothon in our second season, raised over $1,600.
Yeah, that is so cool.
And we've had donations from Dublin, Ireland, seriously, all over the United States, and even Northeast Ohio, go figure.
So we'll have a personalized list of thank yous probably next week.
Yes.
We can say thank you to individual donors, but for right now, we do really have to say from the bottom of our hearts, thank you for stepping up, supporting WJCU. It was totally unexpected. We didn't know what to expect, and this just is exceeding anything we could have imagined. So
I think it's awesome.
It is really awesome. So thank you very much. It means a lot that there are listeners who value this program enough to open their wallets and support the station that makes it possible.
We also have a show tonight.
Yes, we do. What's happening?
It promises to be a good show, I think. You know, we've talked about having a velodrome in Northeast Ohio for, three decades, maybe four. So do you know that we're really getting one?
So I hear.
We are. And in fact, a small group of people have been very committed to getting a track here in Cleveland. And we do have Fast Track Racing's board chair, Brett Davis, in the studio with us this evening to talk to us about how the process has been, where they are, when it's due to open. And it is this spring, and how it's all going.
Okay.
Then we're going to head down to Kentucky. We're going to catch Don Walker as he prepares to skedaddle out to Sacramento to open his annual handmade bicycle show. The show has just grown to mythic proportions over its 8 years.
Wow.
It's better than ever. Brian and I will be heading out to Sacramento next week to attend, and I have been asked to participate in a panel on Friday afternoon. We'll also have a very short conversation with Paul Skilbeck and Julia Beckner-Smith from ArtBike. Now, Paul is actually a public relations guy, and he is the PR guy for The Handmade Show, which is how I met him. But more importantly, Paul puts together ArtBike at each venue where it appears. And Julia, who's in Sacramento, is coordinating this year's NAHBS show. So I first saw an art bike project at NABS in Indianapolis. It's a bicycle-centric community art exhibition, and I'll let him fill you in from there. So we'll try to squeeze in some news. I don't know how much we're going to get, but let's begin with Brett Davis, who's standing right here in the studio to talk about the new Fast Track Cycling Cleveland Velodrome. Brett, welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Diane.
You are the head of Fast Track Cycling.
Yes, I am the head of the board. We have a 12-member board of directors, and I've been given the responsibility, the task of trying to lead us to get this project, to bring it to fruition.
So explain the Cleveland Velodrome project, when it started and where the land is, where that project's going to show up, and then how you got there.
Well, we started working on this project about 4 years ago. There was a group of people that thought, during a long Cleveland winter, wouldn't it be great to have somewhere to ride our bicycles inside? And specifically, wouldn't it be great to have an indoor velodrome so that we can do some track cycling in the city of Cleveland? So that over the years, that's been our number one priority, was to have an indoor velodrome. And what we determined was that we needed to take a phased approach. So we have a site in Slavic Village, right at in the city of Cleveland, at I-77 and Broadway.
So it's got a lot of really good interstate access.
Very excellent interstate access. It's easy to get to from west side, east side, south, pretty much anywhere. You've got 490, 480, 77, all right there, I-90. So it's excellent freeway access. It's within 5 miles of downtown Cleveland, so you got all the hotels there that ultimately we hope to be able to fill up with cyclists and spectators.
That would be awesome. So you really aren't doing the indoor portion yet?
No. Phase one will be an outdoor track. It's 166 meters, which is about a tenth of a mile. And it's galvanized steel substructure with a laminated marine-grade plywood riding surface. So it can and will, it can stay outside for 10 years.
Really?
More. Yep. There's a track in Detroit known as the International Velodrome at Bloomer Park, which is 40 minutes north of Detroit in Rochester Hills, and that track is similar construction. It's been sitting outside for 10 years.
So once the track is built, what kind of bank is it going to have, banking?
The banking's about 45 degrees.
So it's pretty steep.
Pretty steep.
Yeah, and where are you going to put your spectators, on the inner part of the track or up around it?
Phase one, initially, the spectators will be on the inside of the track. We hope to be able to raise some additional funds to maybe buy bleachers for, 200 to 500 people.
It's pretty cool. That's really cool. So phase one will open?
Phase one will open in June. We're making progress every day on our fundraising. We've phase one, which is the outdoor track, the total costs are $300,000. And as of today, we've raised $240,000.
Wow.
So we're about $35,000 short from being able to order the track.
Right.
And we're about $60,000 from being fully funded.
So, and you have grants out looking for that last bit of funding for this phase.
Yes, that funding gap. The game plan. We've got two $25,000 donors that we've gotten maybes from, and we're trying to firm those up. We also have a $50,000 capital grant pending with the Cleveland Foundation.
Cool.
And then we just submitted recently a grant for the Bruning Foundation.
Wow, you really are pulling this off, and I have to say congratulations. This is awesome.
Well, thank you.
We are so excited. So what would you say has been the most and raising money is always daunting, but besides that, what is the most daunting thing that you've come across with this project?
You know, I think that just to stay focused on the task at hand, because it's easy to get bogged down in sidetracked. And so it's really just trying to keep a group of volunteers. You know, our board is volunteer. We don't have any paid staff members. So just trying to keep a group of volunteers motivated and on task and not get sidetracked. And, you know, we really had to, you know, we have limited resources in terms of time and people. So really just to keep everybody energized, to keep people from getting burnt out, and just trying to plug away and just eat the elephant one bite at a time, which is what we're doing now.
Big elephant, yeah. It is a big elephant. So was that land donated?
The land, there's two parcels. One is 3.1 acres. The other is five and a half. So they total about 8.5. And it's owned by the city of Cleveland.
Okay.
So it's right at Broadway and 77, as I mentioned. And it's it was formerly a hospital. It used to be St. Michael's Hospital.
Okay.
So UH bought St. Michael's, and then they shut the hospital down, and then they donated the land and the buildings to the city of Cleveland. And, you know, a long story, but the city borrowed money from the county to demolish the buildings.
So the buildings are gone.
And they've been, you know, everything's been cleaned and remediated, and environmentally it's one of the larger developable parcels that's clean in the city of Cleveland. So
how was it dealing with the city of Cleveland to actually get this land sort of situated for this project?
The city's been great to work with. You know, every time they say they're going to do something, they do it. I mean, the only negative is sometimes they're a little slower than we would like. But, you know, they've been a great partner. You know, they're – when I say partner, I mean it, because they're basically giving us a two-year dollar a year lease. So we've got a two-year lease on the property, and then we also have an option to purchase it.
Wow, that's pretty cool. You've been working with Marty Cater at all?
Have been working with Marty.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, Marty's in the planning department and, you know, deals with all the bike-related stuff. So he's attended a lot of our board meetings, and he's been a good advocate of ours. So,
well, I saw in your presentation that you're actually going to encourage kids to ride, which I am very much in favor of. How would the children's program or the kids' program work?
Well, we're going to have three basically our youth programming is there's three pieces to it, and all kids 18 and under will benefit from free track time, free coaching, free rental equipment, so they can rent track bikes, they can rent helmets if they don't have them, and so. That being said, the three programs deal with kind of age groups. The Pee Wee Peddlers program, which was kind of modeled after a program that they have in Trexler Town.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically is for kids, so you could say 6 to 9, 6 to 8, 5 to 8, that are too young to and probably aren't strong enough to get on the track. So we're gonna have a little obstacle course in a dirt, and they can just ride their regular bikes. And, it'll be free. It'll be, just a way to get kids into cycling and doing something fun. So that's the Pee Wee Peddlers. The next program is our kind of a learn to ride for kids. It's introductory in nature, puts them through the track 101, which is the basics that everybody, regardless of age, will have to take. That goes with free equipment. And then we're going to have a youth racing league. So that's kids 9 to, 16.
Will you have to ride a fixed gear bike on the track?
Generally, yes.
Okay.
Because of the banking and, the difference being the bottom bracket height and the shorter cranks and anything. And I mean, I think we would probably allow higher level, time trialists to maybe if they're trying to, if they want to block off some track time or if they're there and kind of by themselves, we'd probably let some on a select basis, some time trials. But generally it's for track bikes only.
Okay, and the equipment that you're going to have that's available for rental, where's that coming from?
We're going to have in the neighborhood of 20 track bikes, and it'll be varying sizes from the fit kids up to, larger adults. And right now we've had our $300,000 phase one. That
right.
Basically assumes that we pay, retail minus something. So we're pretty confident that we can do better than that.
Yeah, I should think so.
Working with whether it be the local shops or direct to some of the manufacturers, we're actually thinking, wouldn't it be great to get as many shops as we can be involved instead of having one or two dominate it? Let's get 8 to 10, shops as at a minimum be members of our Founders Club, and then maybe we get 3 to 4 bikes from each shop, and just to kind of bring everybody in and be as inclusive as we can.
That would be. You have no idea how awesome that would be, because Cleveland bike shops in general do not usually cooperate on these kinds of projects.
Right.
But this is a project that I think would benefit every single shop in town. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Brett Davis from Fast Track Cycling. He's the chairman of the board. We're going to get a velodrome in Cleveland. Yes, we are. So let's move on to a second about the phasing in. What do you think it will really take to get the next phase going, assuming, of course, that phase one happens in June, which, of course, it will. We've just decided that.
Yep. Phase two will take somewhere about 12 to 18 months to implement. And it's obviously dependent on fundraising. But phase two will be incrementally about $500,000. And that's basically putting a air dome similar to the one over Krenzler Field, albeit much smaller, putting an air dome over the track. And the track only.
So it'd
be a small air dome.
Phase
2A is a small air dome, 35,000 square feet, that just covers the track and doesn't provide any other room for amenities under cover. Phase 2B would be a bigger air dome that would you would have room for significant amount of bleachers on the outside of the track. You'd have room for some floor space for expo space and possibly room for additional amenities, brick and mortar type amenities,
like
under
a
the
pro
cover.
Shop.
Maybe. For the spectator side, they don't care so much about the pro shop. They want to, they're looking for concessions or
for
something to eat and drink. And so we're probably more focused on that than we are a pro shop. There's plenty of pro shops, around town at the local bike shops. We don't need to have our own. So.
Well, that's true. That's true. When you were doing research for the Cleveland project, were you made aware of other projects that are going on similar to ours? Are there more – somebody alluded to the fact that there are going to be velodromes popping up everywhere. Yeah. Is that true?
Well, if you had a nickel for every time you heard of somebody that wanted to build a velodrome, you'd have a lot of nickels. But
but do you know
but,
of other
yeah,
projects?
You, okay. We've heard of a lot of different a lot of different groups trying to do projects. You know, if you look at the ones where they're really making progress, there's one in Rock Hill, South Carolina, that's actually grand opening is going to be middle of March. They raised $4 million. This is right off, right south of Charlotte on 77, right off the freeway.
Wow.
Just as you cross into South Carolina. It's a $4 million project. Giordana, the importer.
Yeah, that's Giordana is sort of hooked up with Performance in Chapel Hill in a way,
so,
I think.
Yeah.
Giordana, and they also import Merck's and Pinarello and a lot of the Italian brands. Yeah.
So they're the named sponsor. They put they did $20,000 a year for 10 years. So
good for
four
them.
Million project. You know, it's an Olympic 250-meter track, which is the Olympic specification, Olympic size. You know, all concrete, outdoor. You know, it's world class. They're having nationals down there this summer. So,
wow.
So that's a real one. Cost them $4 million, and you know. The end of the day, you know, if it rains and they have an event scheduled for that weekend, you know, the event's canceled.
Yeah.
You know, without a cover.
Right.
You know, the other ones I've heard about, you know, they just built the track we're getting. They just built the exact same track in Chicago.
Yeah.
In Chicago Velo campus. So, you know, they're you know, a year ahead of us. You know, there's other tracks in Chicago. You know, we feel that. You know, there are no velodromes in the state of Ohio, so you know, we think we'll be able to draw from
this is
certainly
a sports town. That's one thing about Cleveland. And we did have a velodrome here back in the 40s. 1940s. That was mm-hmm. another century, of course. But we had 6-day track racing here. So why do you think Cleveland's a good venue? I just gave you some reasons, but why do you think Cleveland's a good venue? I mean,
well, I think why is our project a good project for Cleveland? I mean, it's centrally located. You got a neighborhood that's kind of ripe for, you know, some revitalization. You know, you've got a cost structure that is sustainable. So it's not, you know, it's not going to cost us $30,000 to operate this velodrome. It's going to cost us, you know, $6,000 to $7,000 a year to operate this thing. So you don't have to sell many season passes to
right.
cover your, you know, to cover your costs. So it's sustainable. It's well located, and you know, we've got, you know, if we can raise the money for future phases, it'll become a potential for a world class destination. So
it's clevelandvelodrome.org.
Correct.
So you can go look at it, and if anybody's interested in, you know, shelling out a few bucks, there is all this fundraising going on. They can do that.
Absolutely. Go right to our website. You can do an online, you know, make an online donation. We probably worth mentioning that we just rolled out. We finally are offering season passes now that we're, you know, pretty certain that this, you know, the track is going to be built at this point.
And you're a 501c3.
We are a 501c3.
So these would be tax deductible donations?
Well, if you're buying a membership, probably not. But certainly,
but to
certainly make a donate to our capital fund, it's definitely tax deductible. You know, we've got a small program if you're just for smaller donors, 25, 50, 100, no amount's too small. But, you know, then we've got a founders club. We've got 87 people or organizations that have pledged $1,000 each. And in return, you get a 3-year membership. You get your name on a brick paver in the infield, and you get, you know, recognized as a founders club on our website. So,
well, I wish you way lots of luck. And when do you predict opening day?
We haven't set that yet, but it'll probably be we'll be assembling in May. We may have a soft launch, you know, in early June, and then, you know, a more formal grand opening probably, you know, second week of June probably.
Well, this is an Olympic year. This is an awesome thing to have happen in an Olympic year. Well, Brett Davis, thank you so much for coming into the studio and taking time out of your busy fundraising schedule to get our velodrome open here in Cleveland. And we'll keep watching for it. I think maybe the Outspoken Cyclist will be out there and cheering you on.
Well, great. Thanks, Diane.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
And bye-bye.
Well, Brett Davis was right here in the studio with us, and it's very exciting to hear that the Cleveland Velodrome Project is really happening.
It is happening.
I can hardly believe it because we've been reading about this, that it's going to happen, that it might happen, that they're raising money. Apparently, We're getting a velodrome.
What's interesting is when it first started, there were a lot of things going on, and then the person who started it left town and kind of left it dangling. But Brett and this group picked it up and ran with it.
Good
and
for them.
I just think it's awesome.
All right, we got to move along. The
yes,
rest of
do.
Our show is devoted really to the upcoming North American Handmade Bicycle Show, which
yes,
is happening
is.
The first weekend in March in Sacramento.
That's correct.
And to get us started, you got a couple of guests.
I do.
With some pre-nabs things.
Pre-nabs.
Yeah.
That's an interesting statement. So Paul Skilbeck and Julia Beckner are producing something called Art Bike, and they've pretty much turned Sacramento itself into an art bike project. But we'll let them explain. So Paul and Julia, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having us.
Hi.
So... Paul, when I was in, I think, Indianapolis, I saw an example of Art Bike. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was the first year that we tried Art Bike.
I loved it. So tell me Art Bike is.
Art Bike is it's a community arts project that celebrates timeless design and versatility of the bicycle. And the reason that I came up with the idea for Art Bike is that it's a promotional device for NABS. What we're finding in Indianapolis is that back in 2009, as we're telling people about the show and they're getting our messaging, they're hearing about it, and they were saying, yes, you know, that we understand what you're saying, but we don't really get it. You know, we can't really fall in love with this event. You know, not to the point where we're going to attend. And so we said, okay, well, how about Art Bike? And you know, and they said, what's that? And so we said, well, you know, people will leave art, bicycle-themed art out on the streets, in galleries around town, in businesses around town. And the whole community then can involve themselves in Art Bike for the month leading up to the show. And Art Bike is part of NABS. And they all said, great, we get that. And that's really, really cool. And Art Bike's so cool that if NABS is associated with Art Bike, we'll attend NABS as well.
Oh, so you're going to, it's sort of like cross-marketing.
It was kind of cross marketing. It's a way of broadening the funnel of people coming into NABS.
And so then, Julia, what are you doing in Sacramento to sort of make Art Bike happen?
Well, my connection to Art Bike is being a local here in Sacramento, connected to the arts and creative community. Paul enlisted my help to sort of galvanize the local creative community to just have a bigger, to allow Art Bike to have a larger presence and a larger connection to NABS. So that's where I came in. I had the local contacts, you know, as a local in the creative industry in general. I was already connected to lots of people who are into bikes and who are into art. So it was a really easy relationship to develop, and so that's how I got involved.
So where are the places, Julia, in Sacramento that art is showing up that is relative to bicycling?
Well, we were able to enlist a few local boutiques, retailers, restaurants, and actual art galleries to participate. We have Cuffs on Jay. It's a local women and men's vintage boutique that is showing work by a Colorado artist that features vintage bicycles screen printed onto coffee bags. So that's a nice recycled handmade element there that's bicycle centric. Milk Gallery has put together an entire exhibit featuring over 17 local artists in a variety of mediums. It's a great show. Apple Gallery is a local gallery in town that is a photography studio primarily that is hosting a handmade steampunk-style monocycle as well as some bicycle-centric photography that he's taken around the world. We have First Edition, which is sort of a more urban boutique that caters to the young hipster types, for lack of a better way to put it.
Okay.
And they have a lot of, and they have artists featured by a group of bike bloggers that are local who also work in, who are creative as well and do that on their own time. And then in a local bar called the Golden Bear, which is a great California name for a great California bar, they're featuring works by a local photographer who is also an avid cyclist and a Burning Man attendee who's taken some interesting photos of art bikes that have been out in the desert year after year. So there's a variety of people who are active in the creative community and active in the cycling community And there's a big overlap there here in town because we're such a bicycle-friendly city as well as being known for our public arts programs. So there was a lot of people to access. So in addition to creating the status displays around town, we also did a little guerrilla marketing with some painted bikes. We dipped paint bikes in paint and set them around town to increase awareness. We also are scheduling a avant-garde art bike parade. That's scheduled for the Saturday of the show, which will start at our art bike sponsor, Hot Italian, and end at the NABS show hall just as showgoers will be exiting the venue. So that will be some fun. There'll be about 20 bikes there, all handmade by local artists and avid cyclists and Burning Man community, the Burning Man community as well. So there'll be a 5-foot toaster, for instance, that takes two people to cycle. I believe there'll be a gorilla. There'll be some, you know, handmade tricycles and unicycles and all sorts of things on Saturday. And to celebrate Art Bike specifically and to thank all of our sponsors and all of our participants, we're hosting a celebratory Art Bike party the Thursday night prior to the show opening. And that will also be at Hot Italian, which is the California's first bicycle-friendly restaurant.
So when we come out, which we're leaving on Tuesday, we'll show up in Sacramento sometime Thursday evening, we can go to Hot Italian. Is any of this artwork for sale?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Aha. So we can, like, support starving artists as well as bike builders, huh?
We hope so, yes.
Well, I'm pretty excited. So we're heading out there, and we'll see both of you a sure Friday because I have to be there. But maybe we can come. Where is Hot Italian?
Hot Italian is at 16th and Q Streets in downtown Sacramento.
Okay.
The entire central city is laid out on a very convenient grid, so it's very easy to find. The Hot Italian is at 16th and Q.
And so what kind of food do they serve?
They're an Italian-based pizzeria place, but they also do, they're an Italian cultural pizzeria.
Hence the name Hot Italian.
So Italian bikes, they feature everything Italian. So they're always doing Italian bicycles. There are some Fiats in there currently, that sort of thing.
All of the information about Art Bike is, it's on the NABS website, handmadebicycleshow.com.
Right.
And there's a full page there of information about Art Bike. And then there's also a link on that page to the Art Bike Facebook page as well.
Okay. Well, I will see both of you in a week.
Do that. Yeah. Wonderful. And you're going to be blown away by how much fun it is. Everybody's involved. It's the funnest project. It's hilarious. It's inspiring and it's creative and it's delightful. And you're going to absolutely love it. So.
All right.
Looking forward to seeing you there.
I will see you both there and have a great weekend and. I'm looking forward to seeing some cool, weird art.
Well, you won't be disappointed.
All right. Have a great night.
Thank you. Right.
Thank you both. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Paul Skillbeck and Julia Beckner joined us. Let's see. Paul was in...
I don't know
where
I never
Paul
asked
was.
Him where he was.
I know Julia was out in Sacramento, but
that's
I don't know where Paul was.
Yeah, I don't either.
Well, Paul was out in the ether somewhere.
He's in the ether.
But he will be in Sacramento.
Oh, yes.
For the Art Bike project surrounding the North American Handbuilt Bicycle Show, which is March 3rd and 4th.
It's next weekend.
Yeah, in Sacramento. All right. We have overstayed our welcome in this first half of the show, so we've got to take a quick break.
For a change.
Yeah, we'll come back. We'll do a very quick spot of news. And then we're going to talk with someone else very intimately connected with NABS. And you'll want to stay tuned for that. Right after this on The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland. 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
It's almost maple sugar season in Northeast Ohio, and you can experience it firsthand at Cleveland Metro Park's Maple Grove Picnic Area each weekend beginning February 25th through March 11th. On Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., visitors can walk through time along the Sugar Bush Trail to see traditional sap collection and syrup making. Hikes lead to the Sugar House, where guests can watch sap being boiled into pure maple syrup. Maple Grove Picnic Area is located off Valley Parkway in Rocky River Reservation, between Cedar Point Road and Spafford Road. More info at clevelandmetroparks.com.
I'm Greg Priddy.
And I'm Diane Lees.
And we are back on The Outspoken Cyclist, and we're going to take a very quick trip around the cycling news. What do you have for us, Diane?
Well, once again, we begin with product recalls. And I hate being the one to have to do this, but I think it's important, but it is getting old. So the Washington Post actually published this by the Associated Press, women's bicycles. Fuji Saratoga women's bikes imported by Advanced Sports of Philadelphia sold at specialty bike stores nationwide from November of 2007 through December of 2011. Fuji's women's cruiser bikes include the 2008 through 2010 model Saratoga 1.0, Saratoga 2.0, Saratoga 3.0, and Saratoga 4.0. The bicycles come in various colors. They were manufactured in China. The bicycle frame can break in the center during use and cause the rider to lose control, posing a fall hazard. The company is aware of 12 reports of bicycle frames breaking, including 2 injuries, a head laceration requiring 20 stitches and scrapes and bruises.
Whew.
About 10,500 bicycles were sold. For more information, contact Advanced Sports at 888-286-6263, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time, or visit the company's website, fujibikes.com. And it goes on to say mountain bike handlebar stems imported by Shimano of Irvine and manufactured by Postmodern Corp of Taiwan, sold at REI, bicycle specialty stores and dealers nationwide from October 2009 to November 2010. The stem consists of a metal alloy body and front plate and 4 alloy bolts. The stem body is black with red markings and has the word PRO in 4 places on the sides and the word Atherton, A-T-H-E-R-T-O-N. The front plate is black and silver with the PRO logo in the center. The bolts holding the front plate of the stem to the stem body can be pulled out of the threads while the bike is being ridden and cause the rider to lose control of the bike, posing a fall hazard. Incident: Shimano has received 1 report of an incident in which the rider fell and received torso and arm injuries. Exactly 213 in the United States and 83 in Canada. So very small percentage of actual pieces parts. But if you got one, call Shimano, 800-353-4719, Monday through Friday, between 11 and 8 Eastern. Visit the company's website, Shimano.com. Those are the first two. CPSC, Specialized Bicycle Components, expands recall of bicycles due to a fall hazard. This is about 460 bicycles from the Advanced Group of Taiwan. The brake component housed within the bicycle's carbon fork can disengage. This is a cantilever-style bike. The call involves the 2012 Tri-Cross Sport and 2012 Tri-Cross Comp model bicycles. Various colors have the brand name Specialized on the lower front frame. The model name Tri-Cross Sport or Tri-Cross Comp is on the top tube. Authorized Specialized retailers nationwide from June 2011 through November 2011. They sold from between $1,250 to $2,000 manufactured in Taiwan. Stop riding immediately. Return them to an authorized retailer for a free repair or replacement carbon fork. For additional information, call Specialized 877-808-8154 from 8 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, or visit Specialized.com. And there are pictures of what happens, and it's ugly. So if you're riding that bike, please stop, like, now. And those are the recalls of the day.
Whew, okay.
Okay.
Anything to end on, you know, that's
a little nicer.
It doesn't result in death and dismemberment.
Well, we're going to know more about this pretty soon, but probably one of the most exciting things that has happened is the announcement from a large group of people that Bikes Belong, which is also People for Bikes, the League of American Bicyclists, and the Alliance for Biking and Walking may be joining forces to form one umbrella organization.
Wow.
And they came out of this big meeting in San Diego, and I will report more on that on the next show.
Hey, your birthday's not till October, but you might get your wish early.
You remembered how much I think that that's so important.
Of course.
Oh, good. Thank you.
All
yes,
right.
That would be a nice birthday gift.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on.
Yes, we need to move on quickly here. So we've got a gentleman on the line who's getting ready to do some traveling.
Yes, he is. Our friend Don Walker, who is the inspiration, founder, and person of note with the North American Handmade Bicycle Show, is on the line from his home in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Don. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me this evening. I know you're getting on the road here in a moment.
Yeah, okay. we're actually driving out to Sacramento.
What's new for 2012 at NABS?
Well, we're headed out to Sacramento, California, the city of my childhood. I was born and raised there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, actually, I was. I'm the black sheep of the family. I'm the only one that moved away from there.
So you're actually, your family is there.
All of my family's there.
Well, awesome. So. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So I get to combine the trip, with seeing family and a lot of my old friends. I've still got quite a few old friends from high school and even, grade school and stuff that are still out there. So I plan on, doing as much visiting as I can in the short amount of time that I'm there.
Your show really has come a long way since it first started. How do you think NABS has impacted not just the handmade industry, but the bicycle industry in general?
Wow, that is a difficult question. I'll see if I can answer it.
Well, just from your perspective.
I don't want to, pat myself on the back, but I think that a lot of my hard work, and believe it or not, the hard work of the volunteers and the staff that I have, I want to give a shout out to Robin, our front show, or she runs the front of the show.
Right.
Leslie, who's our exhibitor services director and also my fiance and lifelong love. I had a new guy just come on, JC Breslin, who's our now sponsorship manager, and Paul Skilbeck, our public relations guy. I without that staff, I don't know that the show would, be where it's at now or, progressing, for the future. But where is it now and where is it headed? I think that everybody's hard work combined has really impacted not just the handmade industry, but, the bicycle industry in general. I get emails probably, two or three times a month from guys, just, shop rats or guys that work in bike shops and, managers. People just reach out to me and they just say, hey, I just want to say, you putting the show on is like the one thing we look forward to. I don't want to say the other show that they don't look forward to because everybody in the industry knows what it is, where it is, but they all enjoy genuinely coming to NABS, and that to me is the biggest compliment I could, take out of it, and it excites me. I love getting those emails. So,
well, that's interesting. So you're saying that the impact is actually working on people who work in bike shops.
Oh, absolutely. Believe it or not, I don't know if you'd heard about it, but when we were in Indianapolis, most of the shops in Louisville, Kentucky, where I live now, because it's a great cycling scene here, and it's kind of like the unknown gem of cycling. But most of the shops here actually closed down during the Indianapolis show.
Wow.
And they all came up in mass. And if you weren't at the Indy show, Saturday afternoon, probably, 1 o'clock, you had to really, pick your line through the corner kind of a thing just to try to get up the aisle.
Well,
there
was
so
there.
Many people there.
I was there. But I didn't know that all the shops in the area closed down and said, we're going to NABS. I think that's very, very cool.
I think so, too. And I think it's, again, people in bike shops, they either, have an appreciation for what the builders do, or they're learning to get an appreciation for what the builders do.
Well, unfortunately, I think what most people who walk into a normal, when I say normal, a regular bike shop that carries production bikes see today is a lot of the same thing over and over and over again. Where you go to NABS and you get to see all these different bikes, all these different builders, all these different ideas. And I think that's really an exciting thing. So how big do you think the market for custom bicycles, handmade artisan bicycles really is? Do you have any handle on that?
Basically the only thing I really have to go on that is the feedback I get from the distributors. That sell the tubing.
Interesting. Of course, that makes sense.
And the numbers that I've gotten over the last couple years from the three guys that I know directly are selling and have been for several years, which would be Henry James and Nova Cycle Supply and Joe Bringelli.
Right here in Cleveland.
Yeah, and you know, they all say, keep doing what you're doing because it's good for us.
I got it.
So, you know, I don't want to give out facts and figures.
No, of
course, you know,
not.
One of them basically said, you know, you just keep, you know, right on doing, you know, everything the right way. Just, you know, don't let the people, you know, I guess criticize you or don't take it to heart because you're doing everybody a favor. It's good for our business. So, you know, don't worry about it. You know, just keep doing it.
Well, that's an interesting point and one that isn't brought up, that all of these handmade builders are building their bikes in this country. So now we have a whole industry, again, that has grown within the country. There, I know you do have exhibitors from outside of the country this year, and mm-hmm. even more than you've had in the past. But the truth is that the handmade show is about American builders for the most part.
For the most part, it's a celebration of, you know, the craftsmanship and the artisanship and, you know, cottage industry.
Right.
And honestly, I really don't, you know, I don't want to, you know, I guess say that other countries aren't allowed, because we welcome them with open arms. They do what we do. And there's nothing I love more than geeking out on somebody else's wares, you know. if you don't know, I'm sure you do know who it is, but Shinichi Kono from Cherubim Bicycles.
Right.
I actually had ordered one of his frames and took delivery of it at last year's show. So I geeked out on his stuff. Every time he shows up, I'm like the ultimate bike geek. I just go over there and just go, wow, how did you do that?
Which,
you
know, is very cool,
and this
too.
This is from a guy I've built, you know, probably I'm coming up on 500 frames in my career. And I'm looking at somebody else's stuff going, wow, I never even would have thought of that.
Isn't that,
you know,
interesting?
So I like looking at everybody else's stuff probably, you know, as much as, if not more than, everybody else. So,
do you know how many exhibitors there are this year?
Yes, we have 160 full booth exhibitors.
Wow.
And then we have 12 new table builders.
Right, right. Which
so,
I think is
the,
very
those
nice.
Those guys
that you
only show, get to show one frame or one complete bike.
Right. I think that's cool.
Yeah, and so that makes it a total of 172. We are just off the record set last year in Austin.
Wow. I know that it's going to be a packed show. You also have a lot of seminars. I'm even on one panel.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you very much for letting me Shanghai you into that.
No, thank you for inviting me. I feel honored, especially the rarefied air in which I will sit with people like our buddy E. Ritchie. So here's something that I know everybody, and I'm not going to ask you where, but I know you move the location each year, and
mm-hmm.
it's like the big anticipation when you close the show announcing where it will be in the next year. This mm-hmm. is a weird question. Do you think there needs to be more than one show a year?
No, I don't.
Okay.
And the reason I don't is it takes so much work for the builders. You know, when you're talking about a big company that comes to the shows, just I'll pick on Shimano here for a moment. When you're talking about somebody of that scale, they're used to having a trade show budget. They're used to doing several shows a year. When you're talking about a guy like Richard Sachs, for example, he really can't afford to be away from his workbench longer than the time that he's gone for NAMMS. If he did two or three different shows, you know, he would, you know, miss out, I mean, essentially on delivering probably up to, you know, 8 or 10 bikes.
Okay. I understand.
And that's affecting, you know, people's income. So I really think that one show a year is really the way to go.
Well, can I make a pitch for Cleveland?
You know what? I've actually talked and met with somebody from Cleveland from the X Center.
IX Center, yes.
I'm sorry, the
That's
IX
okay.
Center, yes. They came and pitched to me. So,
well, I'm on,
know,
that pitch committee.
They've already been, you know, working on me.
Now that
so.
Would be awesome. Awesome. So I'm going to ask you one more question about your actual personal work. But first I want to remind everybody we're speaking with Don Walker, who is Mr. Handmade Bicycle Show. You build a lot of track bikes, fixed gear bikes.
I do, and that's where my passion's been ever since I was a teenager.
Well, we have, as the other guest on our show this evening, Brett Davis, who is the chairman of the board of the Cleveland Velodrome, which is going to open in June.
Wait, what?
Yes, we are going to have our first outdoor track. We're going to have our first track in Northeast Ohio since the 1940s.
Wow.
I did not know that. Oh,
so is it already under construction?
It actually, I think they're they have the land. They are, I think the funding gap right now is very small, and they're just waiting to hear on two grants and a big gift. And I think it's supposed to be opening first week of June, a soft opening, and then a grand opening middle of June.
Wow, what surface are they using? Are they going
It's a laminated board. Yeah, the laminated board and steel girder underneath.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Isn't
are they going
cool?
250 or 333?
They're going 166. It's going to be short.
Oh, they're going for tight. Okay.
Tight and steep.
Yeah.
But my question to you is, okay, so we're doing this in Cleveland. Are there people building tracks in other places?
Well, Chicago actually, I believe, has one under construction right now, if it's not already done.
Yeah, I think, yeah. And then he was also talking about one in South Carolina, Charlotte.
Rock Hill, South Carolina. When I was getting ready to move or relocate from Indianapolis /Speedway where I lived.
Right.
I heard about the Rock Hill Velodrome, and Leslie and I actually really considered that hard. It was something that I was really, really, we had gone so far as to start, really researching real estate. And then my friends that lived in Louisville had said, why don't you consider Louisville? So we came down here and started hanging out, weekends and just really checking it out. We fell in love with the place. And now here's a little hush-hush secret.
Okay.
After the show this year.
Yeah.
I am going to start devoting some time to try to get a velodrome here in Louisville.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be awesome.
Absolutely. And here's the best part is you see right now, there's so many different locations that are trying to get a velodrome. Sacramento, believe it or not, has a velodrome association run by Dean Alliger. I don't know if you know Dean on Facebook or not. Hell of a nice guy. You'll meet him at the show. But they are, in the works trying to get their funding together so they can get one.
So it is a growing.
There's more than just one location that's looking to put up a velodrome right now. And honestly, in my opinion, velodrome racing has kind of gone understated here in the United States for the last probably, decade, 20 years or two decades. We've had great track racers, but you just don't see that many guys making an effort to race track anymore.
It's such a cool sport.
Put it this way, when I was growing up, I lived in Sacramento. I would have to hitch a ride with somebody over to San Jose's Hellyer Park and race that. And then I'd, race the next, that's the Friday night race. And then I'd race a Criterium, on Saturday and a road race on Sunday or vice versa every weekend in the summer. You don't see guys do that anymore. But honestly, track racing is the best way that you can get and develop a better sprint.
Oh, I can believe that. First of all, it's fixed gear riding, which means your handling skills, your balance, all of that is better.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I understand.
And it helps you with your spin. And here, I'm going to quote one of my favorite frame builders.
Okay.
Roland Delasana, you can ask him this at the show. All you have to do is say, you can't win big races, and he'll say, if you can't spin big gears.
There you go. I love it. What a great line. What a great line. So what
Roland's a card.
What are you personally bringing to the show this year? Anything exciting and new?
Am I?
Yeah.
Yeah. For the most part, I'm bringing team bikes.
Okay.
And then I have one showpiece.
Okay. Which we will talk about after we see it at the show.
Yeah, absolutely. The showpiece. Do you want me to give you a preview of the showpiece?
Okay, if you want to.
I wasn't sure if you wanted.
No, it's up to you whether you want to break it.
The showpiece is a. One of my team riders said, "Hey, I'm looking for a particular kind of bike. Do you think you can help me?" And I said, "Sure." He collects a lot of vintage British bikes. So
Lug
he's got
steel.
A Bob Jackson, and he's got, a Claude Butler, and he's got this, and he's got that. So he's got a lot of older British bikes. And, so he's telling me what he wants, and I go, I could make that happen. I said, here's what we're going to do, though. We're not going to go modern. We're going to go retro.
Yeah. I love
and
it.
And so I had this this old track, Fort Crown, that that Paul Sadoff of Rock Lobster gifted me. He goes, dude, I am never going to use this. Take it off my hands.
We just talked to him.
Huh?
We just talked to Paul.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Paul's great.
Yeah.
So he gives me this Fort Crown like 5-6 years ago. And this thing's sitting on my shelf, and I'm just waiting for a project to come up. So when my, you know, a team writer, his name's Mark, he says, you know, hey, Walker, I'm really want to do this. And I said, okay, let's do it, but we're going retro. So I got this Fort Crown, and I pretty much designed the bike around that Fort Crown. So what I've essentially done is I have gotten as many vintage tubes as I've could. I've gotten the crown, the fork blades, you know, older, you know, vintage Columbus tubing, you know, the heavy stuff, and some Reynolds stuff. So it's kind of a mix of 531 and SP. And I put together what my interpretation of a circa 1950s or early 60s stayer bike for motor pacing.
No way.
Absolutely. Now, here's the best part. When I first concepted the idea of going retro, I call up old Rick Hurtberg. You know Rick, don't you? From
Fanatic. Sure.
Yeah. So I call up old Rick, and he deals the Gisala rims, or he imports them to the U.S. I'm like, hey, Rick, I've got this idea for a bike. Is there any way you can help me? And he says, what do you need? And I told him, you know, I'm looking for a 700C wood wheel, you know, wood rim, and a 24-inch wood rim.
Oh, my God. And he probably had them.
And he goes, you know what? He goes, what colors are you looking for? So I went through his palette, and I go, I'm looking for that color. It is like a honey or something like that.
Right.
He goes, I don't have them. Let me get them for you.
Oh, cool.
So he called over to Italy, and they specially made them for me. He emailed me back, what drilling do you want? And I said, well, you know, stayer bikes are only 36 hole back then, you know, so
right.
Let's go 36 hole.
What hubs did you use?
I'm sorry?
What hubs did you
use?
See,
I'm getting to that part of the story.
Okay.
You're getting me all excited, too. So then once I, you know, got that, I started thinking, what kind of hubs could I get? So I started looking on eBay, and I saw some Chatterleyas, and I go, you know, that might work, but, you know, I'm not sure. Maybe they weren't Chatterleyas. Maybe they're Normandies or something, but I was looking for a vintage track hub. And then I, out of the blue, I got this this email from Curtis Odom of Southern California. Do you know Curtis?
I know the name. I don't know him.
Curtis is like an engineering master. He, you know, is reproducing all the really cool and classic vintage bike parts.
Okay.
So he's doing hubs, he's doing cranks, stuff like that, And so I just emailed him back, and he says, do you have any needs, you know, that maybe I could fill? I'm looking to get, you know, some track hubs on a bike, and I know you're big into track. And I said, actually, yes, Curtis, I am. So we started talking, and during the dialogue, I told him what the project was, and he goes, oh, that would be really cool. So he, you know, we started talking, and he goes, what crank are you going to use? And I said, well, that's kind of the thing. I said, I'm having a problem getting connected with somebody that could actually supply me with a 66 tooth chainring. And he goes, how big? And I said, 66. And he goes, I think I can do that. So he took a week or two, and then he sent me a CAD drawing, and and he's got like the old style campy. I don't even recall the model number or the model name is like a Grand Sport or something like that, but it's a triple crank, triple arm. Instead of five arms, it's got three.
Huh.
And he's you know, got the
so
cat
it was a
drawing
Cotter
of the 66 tooth chainring, and it looks very British because you remember back in the old days when BSA made drivetrains for bikes.
Well, they were Cottered cranks.
Right, but
yeah.
they made a you know, the chainring actually had the BSA letters, you know, as part of the support in the chainring.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yes, I do remember that. Very cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
So he goes, check this out. So it's got his initials, CO, for Curtis Odom.
Cool.
So this bike, the bike hasn't even, you know, been built yet. I mean, they're put together. It's already, the frame's already been built.
Okay.
But the bike has not been assembled yet. I sent it off to Keith Anderson in, Grants Pass, Oregon. That's where he's at.
Okay.
Sent it off to him for paint, and he's teased me with some pictures. I told him what I was looking for. I said, I want this thing to look like it's from the 50s or 60s. I said, and that means my logo has to change. He actually designed some, you know, some letters that housed my...
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw it on Facebook or not, but he really did an awesome job with the logo. So we got it painted British Racing Green.
Of course.
Of course. And, you know, I made this beautiful, humongously long stem because stayer bikes, nobody ever really owns a stayer bike. They all loan it to their friends.
And nobody knows what it is. So you have to explain that the stayer bike has a smaller front wheel and a larger rear wheel.
Right. A stayer bike, I'll explain it for the listeners here. A stayer bike is essentially a bike that is used for motor pacing on the velodromes, and they race behind a motorcycle going like 50 or 60 miles an hour.
Right.
They have a small front wheel with a reversed fork so they can get closer to the motor, you know, cycle that's pacing them.
Right.
Therefore going faster, you know, because they're in the draft.
Right.
They use huge gears like a 66, 15, 66, 14, huge gears. So, I mean, so that way they can go that fast. But anyhow, the stems on these bikes are huge long, and they have to have a support rod going up from the fork crown to the end of the stem to keep, you know, the stem stable during the high G's on the banks of the track. So anyhow, so I, you know, and again, nobody ever really owns a stair bike because, you know, if somebody has one, they loan it to their friend if they need it. So it's got to fit anybody from like a 53 centimeter up to, you know, like a 61.
Right.
So
yeah,
so
but
I got
you
this
only
huge long stem that I made. I had it chrome plated. I'm really, you know, honestly, Diane, I'm really proud of this bike, even though it's not even been assembled yet. Everything on this thing says to me that it's a showstopper.
Okay, now you have me really excited about coming out to the show. I was excited before. Actually, I'm a little nervous about the panel, but it'll be fine.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
We'll see. All right, so I'm going to let you get packed, get yourself a good night's sleep, drive safely.
Thank you.
And I'll see you in a week.
All right, excellent.
All right.
Thanks so much,
Diane.
Have a good
night.
Thank
you.
I appreciate everything you do for you know, what we do.
Well, and I appreciate you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Don Walker, the coordinator of the North American Hand-Built Bicycle Show, joined us from his home in Louisville, Kentucky, where he's just about to launch out for the West Coast.
Yep. Says the trailer's all packed, and he's on the road first thing in the morning.
Excellent. All right. And you're on the road shortly.
I am on the road shortly. Well, exactly. We are not driving. We are flying out.
Okay.
And we will be at the Handmade Show next week, so the show will happen in this very interesting technical way. Or non-technical way, as the case.
Yeah, well, we've got a couple of great interviews queued up for next week.
Yes, we do.
So we will be here, even though Diane will not.
I actually was thinking of maybe calling in and saying, hey,
we'll see. All right, we'll see how that goes.
All right.
Well, until then, hope the weather is breaking, and please ride safely, and we will see you on The Outspoken Cyclist in a week.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at WJCU.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at WJCU.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.